We're back.
It is podcast time. So those of you who've been listening to our podcast every single week may think that Kristen and I get together every week to do this podcast, but we actually filmed a few all together because Kristen's been away in Connecticut doing this beautiful show. So we actually haven't seen each other in like a month. And here we are together, very excited.
Like in my ultimate bliss and pleasure. Natalie Roy is so pretty. I just want you all to know what I'm looking at. It makes me so happy to see her face. And it's especially great after not seeing your face for a while. Yes. It's like, it feels like water.
Yes.
And like when you're really thirsty.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. You're my cool drink of water. Is that what you're saying? I'm really bad at cliches. I always get them wrong.
I don't know if anyone ever says you're my cool drink of water, but they will start saying it now after this podcast.
So we have been having the most joyous fun time. I took the train up yesterday and I met Kristen at the theater and we had all the big hugs and then Kristen took me by the hand and introduced me to everyone as her wife.
This is my wife, Natalie.
That's right. And we got all cute and ready, and we went to Kristen's opening, which was just stunningly beautiful, and we're going to talk about today. And then all day today, we've just been having all of our Connecticut dreams come true. We went and had a beautiful coffee and sat outside in the sunshine.
We did our little journal practice. It's always fun when we're together, because all of a sudden, it's like the amount of like spiritual downloads it's been on for full blast all day long.
Full blast. So all we did was have, I think like our morning coffee was like 2 or 3 hours. Yes. 'Cause like we just kept having deep spiritual conversation in between journaling.
That's right.
And then we went and had the most gorgeous breakfast. We went antiquing.
Can I talk about our gorgeous breakfast at the Whistle Stop Cafe?
Yes.
Where we walked in and they had like healing teas.
Yes.
So you could like find which kind of tea you liked. And then we were talking to a woman who worked there and she said that the woman who owns the place like is way into herbs and healing and yoga and all these things. And I was like,
of course we ended up here.
Of course we ended up here.
Yeah, and we had a beautiful walk through town. Mm-hmm. We bought jewelry for each other.
We did. We're such good romantic partners.
We had a day of romance in Connecticut.
We did. And then we did a photo shoot at a gazebo.
Yes, we did.
And then naps.
And then we had naps, and here we are.
And here we are, freshly napped and ready to podcast.
So we just wanted to let you know about how beautiful our day was and how excited we are to share this with you all.
Why does it make me so happy?
And so we were actually having a bit of a time coming up with what we wanted to podcast about because there were so many topics and ideas flowing in and streaming in. But ultimately, we thought we would start with where we are. And I wanted to share with you, without giving away any details of the show, I wanted to share with you the experience of seeing Darling Grenadine. Kristen, what is the theater it's at and how long is it playing?
Oh, this is fun.
That's information I don't know.
So Darling Grenadine, written by Daniel Zychek, is playing at the Norma Terrace Theater in Chester, Connecticut. So the Norma Terrace Theater is part of the Goodspeed Theater, and it's like where they do the new work, like new musicals, more progressive things. And it's in the cutest little town you've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
And it runs from now until, shall I check?
September 17th?
Something. Yeah, September
something
17th.
Like that.
Sounds right. Like mid September.
Yeah.
And
are they on an 8-show a week schedule, 6-show a week schedule?
I think they have Mondays and Tuesdays off.
Great.
It's such a gem. It's such a little gem.
I have had, I think, 3 theater experiences in my whole life where the experience was so visceral, I was just sobbing. Like, and the emotion was going through my body in such a way that, you know, everyone around me just had to be on board because there was no stopping the just the level of healing and movement that it caused in my system and in ways that you don't expect. That's what I think the gift and beauty of theater is. It's almost like I can go to a bookstore and say, I'm really working on, you know, feeling attached or feeling frightened or whatever the thing is. And I can pick up a book that seems to directly relate to what I'm feeling and I can seek out getting an answer. There's something about the experience of theater where something moves inside of you that you didn't even know was there, that something gets awakened inside of you, that something gets touched inside of you, and then all of a sudden my whole system is so shaken by it in such a profound way. So this has happened to me twice in New York, when I saw Fun Home and when I saw The Testament of Mary Magdalene on Broadway, and now it's happened a third time with Darling Grenadine. And it's difficult to explain exactly even what moments caused it, because they're not necessarily linear, right? Yes. It's just that all of a sudden a word, a lyric, a touch of a hand, a look in someone's eye, a movement on stage, a projection, a lighting cue would happen that would awaken something in me that I didn't even know was this pain that was inside that was coming up to be healed. So it was the most beautiful theater experience. I couldn't believe that my best friend directed this beautiful thing that I was watching. I could believe it, actually. But I think that, without giving away details of the show, it really talks about moments of decision in our lives and how oftentimes, Kristen and I were talking this morning about when we're called to listen to our inner wisdom, and when sometimes we're too busy or we're working too hard or we just don't want to face that inner wisdom that's coming through, or we're so scared of taking action on that inner wisdom that's coming through that we'll get into feelings of delay or just watching or avoiding. And there was something about that piece where you could not avoid anything any longer just by watching it.
Yes. It's so funny how I always feel like my shows come to me to be great teachers. Like they've come to teach me something.
Mm.
And every time a show's come into my life, they feel like assignments.
Yeah.
And I know, like I know when I know about a show.
Yeah.
Like it will tell me, this: I am for you.
Yeah.
I am for you. You are for me. We're doing this together. This jump aboard.
Mm.
And then, especially like for Darling Grenadine, I've been developing it for 3 years. So it continues to teach me over and over again. And so I think of different, like, almost like benchmark decisions that have even happened in my life since I've been working on this.
Mm.
And it continues to teach me, and it actually scares me because of what it calls up out of me and who it calls me to be.
Yeah.
And I know that I have a long ride forward with it, and it's going to keep calling me up. Yes.
And moving those places inside of us that, there's the next place I have to look now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what art is for, right? Art is the opportunity to be an artist, is about saying, like, let's bravely look at this. Let's bravely go here together, you know, audience and cast or crew, like whoever's involved. Let's all tell this story together. And it will touch everyone differently. Like the joy of, I was sitting outside after the show and listening to people as they were leaving the theater. What did you think? And what was your favorite part? And hearing everybody's very, very different experience. There was a collective experience of that people felt moved. That there was movement that happened. That people felt different after seeing this piece than they felt walking into this theater.
Mm-hmm.
But how it moved inside of everyone was so different.
Mm-hmm.
And the moments that were memorable to them or stuck out to them were all very, very different.
Yes.
So it leads me to think when Kristen and I were talking today about moments of decision, and we as artists are often confronted with, should I do this, should I do this? Actually, a member of our community recently just posted, I turned down an acting job because this other circumstance didn't feel right, and have I made a mistake? Should I have regrets about this? And I think oftentimes we will be of two minds with decision making. We'll either make a decision and then we'll wonder what if, or we will not want to make a decision because we want to keep the possibilities of all things alive. And the minute we make a decision, we've now committed to this one possibility being the one that we're moving forward. And so sometimes decision-making, although it's meant to be a point of power for us and that we can become powerful creators by saying, I'm going to work on this show, not this other one, or whatever the decision is, we do see it sometimes as a place of limitation, not empowerment.
Sure. And there can be a certain amount of grieving that can happen when you make a decision.
Yeah.
You know, how it will open so many possibilities in one hand, but also not in the other. And it makes me think about when we talk about elimination, right? And elimination in the first chakra, correct? Mm-hmm. Right? And I was kind of like hearing Natalie Roy in my head as we were talking, but about, you know, so if we have a vision for our life, we have this foundation that we, from which we want to create our life, the great thing that elimination does is says this, not this.
Yes.
And it's interesting because as a director, I heard a director say once that the most important job of director is tone.
Mm.
And tone is really saying this, not this.
Mm.
This, not this. Right?
Wow.
So establishing a tone for a piece is about getting so clear about what it wants to be. And isn't that what we want to do with our lives and our soul, is listen to it and get really clear about what it wants, what it already is, and
yeah.
how it wants to be expressed. That's what it is. So like the show already lives, like the show, even though it had never been staged before, already lived energetically. I could see it in my mind. I could watch it. I've been in communion with it for the last 3 years. And the same thing is true for our own individual souls.
Mm.
They came here for expression, right? And they came here to be manifest. And part of the listening is that communal time we do with our vision and our lives and our dream, so that then we can, as we go out as creators in our lives, make decisions based on what is true. And you were preaching to me this morning about conversations.
Yes.
You know? Mm. And we were talking a little bit about how, like, often we delay having conversations in life.
Yes.
I might even read to our lovely listeners. By the way, we're having coffee this morning, and she just lays this one on me. I'm like, hold on, let me take a sip before I continue. I was like, hold on, I'm going to write that down because I feel like you're preaching to me so hardcore. She said, when do we delay the conversation hoping things will change, as opposed to having the conversation and letting spirit change it?
Mm.
Right?
Mm.
It was so magnificent, and I thought about our decisions in our life. We delay our decisions, we delay our conversations.
Mm.
We often want to sit back and kind of like see what happens.
Yeah, hope it dissolves, hope something moves so we don't have to take action, so we don't have to, especially hard conversations,
sure.
Right? Let's say we know we have to have a conversation with someone. We're already rehearsing in our head all the worst case scenarios. So it continues making us afraid of moving towards that conversation because we're already playing out that it's not going to go well, or something bad might happen, or they might think badly of us, or I might not get what I want out of this conversation.
Yes.
And so oftentimes it causes us to be in this retracted state or this smaller state, when really if we just allow for us to just show up in the conversation. And I often think that when we have conversations with people, we only have half of the conversation. So let's say you and I were going to have a conversation.
Yep.
Maybe leading up to the conversation, I might think something to myself like, I just hope this goes so well. I love Kristen so much. Kristen's my best friend in the world, and all I want is for this to go well, because I love her so deeply, and there's a piece of me that's so scared to say this or to say that. I'm so scared maybe she won't really hear me. Whatever the thing that we build up in our head is, right?
Yeah.
So then I go to you, and rather than saying all of that, I just go into, here's the conversation I need to have with you.
Yes.
Now, what would happen if I showed up and said, Kristen, I love you so much. I'm so worried this isn't going to go well. And because I love you so much, that's all I want. If I actually
I would scoop you up into my arms and put you on my lap.
That's right.
And say,
tell me what it is.
Let me be your Santa Claus and fulfill your desires.
That's right. So we almost, we have the conversation with ourselves in our head that we are meant to have with the person in front of us. We're only giving them half of the conversation by the time we even get to the having of it.
Oh, man.
And it's almost like, I wonder how much more disarming all conversations would be. I even think about what's going on in the world right now. you know, when the conversation is hate, how different would it be if it was like, I don't understand you, and I'm feeling this hatred for you, versus I feel this hatred for you. You know, maybe things could be different if we were having the whole conversation and being open to showing up for it. I often think when we're planning the conversation, the mind only knows what it already knows. The mind is a computer for processing data and information. So it only has the data and information from what has already happened and already occurred. So when it's predicting our future for us, it can only do so from a place of what it already knows and has already processed. Spirit knows what isn't even in our realm of possible thinking yet.
Yes.
So when we're planning how the conversation might go and allowing that to dictate whether we have the conversation or not, it's like we're cutting ourselves off from spirit saying, but you have no idea that the conversation might lead to this place, this place, this place, that your mind isn't even able to process yet.
Well, and isn't that the truth? And everything makes me think about directing.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm collaborating with a designer, often, like say I'm watching a scene, say I'm working with a lighting designer. Speaking of, I got to work with the lighting designer of Fun Home on this. I was so in my joy. And I say, something in this cue doesn't feel quite right. It's supposed to feel like stark, ugly, truth-telling morning. And something about this feels too warm. It feels to me like there's almost too much like safety and warmth in this lighting cue. And I love, like, the conversation becomes, yes, I felt that too. And I feel like, but let me tell you the limitations I'm working with. And let me tell you what options I have. And may I try something that feels like it might evoke more starkness, right? I also could have said, make it more this.
I don't like it.
Yeah. I like it or like a really bad director, I could be like, make it blue. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And then they'd be like, blue's wrong.
Right.
How come she wants it blue?
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Right? So
and not collaborating in the solution, right? Oftentimes when we come to a conversation or a decision, it's here's my way, now get on board.
Yes.
Versus you are here in this conversation as my collaborator for truth.
Yes.
You are here in this moment of decision as my collaborator for us both being in our most authenticity.
Yeah.
Or whatever the goal is.
Yeah.
And how can we incite people's collaboration as opposed to making separatism and sides?
That's exactly right. So can we do that in our relationships? Can we do that in our friendships? Can we do that in our business situations? Is opening up conversations without prescripting how they need to go, right? So we were talking about this morning over coffee. You're reading this beautiful passage by Osho, and he said, like, often we don't let our emotions come up and experience them.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of how often we don't let our emotions come up because we're afraid of what it may cause us to realize that we need, like, oh, there's something here I need to act on. I'm feeling frustrated here. Oh, I really am feeling sad about this. Because we've already decided that there isn't that we are not powerful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that there isn't a solution. But that those emotions come up of, like, frustration or sadness or because life is trying to get our attention.
Yeah.
And we don't need to be prescriptive and this is what will soften.
That's right. And if I feel sadness, this will happen. So right. I better not.
Or if I'm feeling sad, and so I have a conversation with this person saying, like I almost feel like it's almost like we're afraid to feel sad, because if we realize we're sad, then we might actually have to go address the sadness.
Right.
One in ourselves, and like who else might be involved in that sadness, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we often try to have the solution, as opposed to collaborate on finding solutions.
Right. Like, we're not even going to have the conversation until we're sure of what solution we need to come out of the conversation.
That's it.
And that is when we turned the conversation this morning about, but isn't the only conversation we need to have is one with ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And one with our spirit.
Yes.
Cosmic consciousness, love, nature. The conversation we're avoiding isn't out there. the conversation we're avoiding is actually inside. And the reason we're avoiding that conversation is because we don't know what the solution is.
Oh, so we don't even want to have a conversation because we think we have to know the solution beforehand.
That's right.
As opposed to just really allowing ourselves to be in conversation.
And maybe even celebrating how glorious to not know what to do with myself.
Yes.
How can I celebrate and accept that I have no idea what's going on? Yes. And I have no idea where all this is going, but I'm just willing to show up because I'm just worth that.
Ugh. I know.
And I think of conversation. You know, you hear the thing of you have one mouth and two ears because we're supposed to listen twice as much as we speak. I do think that our inner, authentic self, our true wisdom, our highest self, is always, always speaking. And I think it's almost like we turn the volume down so low because we're so scared to listen because of what action it might require us to take. And so it's easier to sit in neutrality, and it's easier to sit in, I don't really know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that delay. But then we get stuck, and then we complain so much about being stuck, and why are things not happening, and why do I feel invisible, and why do I not feel seen and heard out in the world, and why can't I get an agent, and why can't I find the perfect partner? And it's like, because you haven't shown up yet.
That's right.
You're not being seen because you, where in your own life are you not seeing you? You're not being heard. Your voice, your artistry is not being heard and expressed in the world because where have you not heard your own expression yet? And so the deep calling isn't to say, what's wrong with the world? What's wrong with my partner? How can I bolster myself up and get the confidence to just take action and have the conversations and make the decisions and do what I need to do? The deep calling is to say, there's nothing to do but listen.
There's nothing to do but listen. There's a new book called, I might mess it up, but I think it's called Leadership in Silence or Leadership Through Silence. Mm. Brené Brown had posted about it the other day. I think she had written a quote on the book, and but the title struck me, and it struck me so hard because I was like my soul screamed yes. And I looked it up on Amazon, and it was basically these gentlemen, two guys, had written it about how the greatest leaders in the world, the greatest creative thinkers, the forerunners, the entrepreneurs of the world spend a lot of time in silence, right? And as we know, like when we think of great scientists in the world, there's so much inner time that you have to spend to receive the communication.
Yes.
That deep listening, you know, artists and writers, this kind of like deep listening process in order to bring it into the world.
Yes.
And so often this week, I was receiving the message from the universe of, it's always an inner game. Everything, as we talk about all the time, everything that you see on the outside, it's what's reflected on the inner.
Mm.
And every time that you think that there is something in form that needs to be changed, before you take any action, go all the way inside and start there.
Mm.
Right? Start there. Have that inner alignment before you try to do the outer thing. Right? So, and because we know that the outer world is, it's such a blessing that the outer world is a hologram back of the inner world.
It shows us.
It shows us. So if we can look around in our life and go, this, I'd like to change this.
Yeah.
So then what's the conversation I need to have on the inner? Mm. And we don't even need to know the solution.
That's
the thing.
Right. We need to be willing to show up to the conversation knowing we don't know the solution and having that be part of the game.
That's right. And say, all right, spirit, all right, universe, here is the question that I have. This is a thing I see on the outer world. Mm. I'd like to change that. Teach me what I need to do on the inner in order to change it on the outer.
And one thing you and I've been talking a lot about is clearing the clutter in the outer.
Oh.
That oftentimes there's so much noise. Mm-hmm. There's so much clutter in our email inboxes. Mm-hmm. There's so much clutter in our homes. There's so much clutter of working so much, of having our social calendar so filled, of having so many friends to spend time with, of having so many coffee dates on our schedule, of having so many classes that we're taking. There's so much noise and congestion in our outer world that all we're actually doing is giving ourselves an excuse to not have time and space to listen.
Delay. We're delaying the conversation.
Yeah. I remember Kyle Cease saying once that he meditates or spends deep personal practice for 2 hours a morning. And even when he's on tour, mm-hmm. even, you know, no matter what he's doing. And someone said, how can you afford the time to do that? Yeah. You know, you're doing world tours and you're writing books, you're doing all the things. And he said, oh, I can't afford not to.
That's right.
Because if I don't carve out those 2 hours to do that, then I will be carved out in a different way to make me do it anyway.
That's right.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really interesting to think about. To me, it's like when I was talking about in the beginning about tone, right? Mm. Like, when you're with a piece and you're really going deep inside of it to know how to bring it forward, that's what the calling is then to do with our own lives.
Mm.
Right? Our own lives, our relationships, our art is like go inside and commune in order to bring it forward.
Yeah, and I love that. What's the tone of your life?
What's the tone of your life?
And is it too blue? You know?
Yeah, and you don't need to know how to fix it.
That's right. And you get to trust that the people who know how to fix it will show up once you stand for exactly the tone that you're looking for.
What is the tone of my life?
Mm. And everything comes from there. The actors get cast, and the people get hired, and the cues, and whatever, the music, the lighting, it'll all come in alignment with the tone that you choose.
Yeah.
But if you haven't chosen a tone, it's going to be chaos.
It's going to be chaos.
Yeah.
All I want to do is spend time right now with myself and my spirit and having conversations.
Yeah.
Like having the deep ones. And I really feel like that's how we get ready to have a major shift in our lives.
Yes.
Like if you feel like you're in a place where you want your life to change and you want to go to a whole new level in your life, you want to go to a brand new place you've never been before anything, carve out a great chunk of time to get really still.
Yeah.
And to get one with your aloneness. And a lot of people I know will talk about that they're afraid of that.
Yes, afraid of the emptiness, afraid of the quiet, afraid of the aloneness.
Afraid of what emotions might come up that they have to sit with.
Yes.
You know, in the aloneness. It's like why it can become really easy to distract ourselves sometimes,
yes.
Right? Because we're afraid of what might come up. But what always wants to come up is our healing and our liberation. And truly, I believe our dreams.
Yes.
Right? And I believe that our anytime that there's any kind of healing that wants to be had, it's to return us to wholeness.
That's right.
To return us to love, to return us to beauty, to return us to everything that we want.
Yes.
Right? So the healing process is so important so that we can have all that we want.
Yes.
And all spirit is ever trying to do is saying, I know the way.
Yes.
I am the GPS.
Yes.
I know how to get you everything you want.
You don't have to know. I already got it. I got this. Listen. Yes.
So the only real decision we ever have to make is to be willing to have the conversation. The inner conversation.
The only decision we ever have to be made, that ever has to be made, is I am willing to show up for the conversation with my higher self, whatever it looks like. And mm-hmm. I'm willing to do more listening than speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to keep showing up for that conversation, knowing that that's actually my only job.
It's my only job.
It's almost like anything else is just distraction, and distraction is going to be the death of the Dharma.
Yes.
And that's what we are here for, and the world needs us more than ever.
Did you just say distraction is the death of the Dharma?
Is that what I said?
That was so good. That is the truest thing I've ever heard. Oh. I think that's what Stephen Pressfield's work is all about.
Yes, the war of art.
Yeah, distraction is the death of the of the Dharma. And all I see is, here we are, we're all these light beings, we're all these creators and healers, and these artists, we're all of us, every single one of us, came to this planet to help restore, to bring back healing and health and order and love. That's what we came to do, and that's what lights us up, and we have gifts to use to do that for the world.
Mm.
And it's the only thing that any of us want is to do our purpose here.
Yes.
And we get terrified, and in order to mask that terror of actually being as big as we are and being a vessel for the universe to use, we hide.
Mm.
And we have to come out of hiding.
We have to come out of hiding.
We have to come out of hiding, and not just for ourselves.
Mm-mm.
The bonus is you get it all.
Yeah, the bonus, is your bank account will grow. You'll get to live your dreams. You know, you'll get to be, attract beautiful relationships. Yeah. I mean, I know this to be true, that my deepest dream was to move to New York City. And it was not until I started meditating on the regular, I became a yoga teacher, I studied hours and hours of studying energetic anatomy and positive psychology, and just learning and going in deep. It wasn't until that moment that all of a sudden I met Kristen Henge at a party one night. And little did I know that not only would you and Rock of Ages and that whole experience take me to New York, but the universe is so profoundly in tune with me and with my Dharma, it was going to give me New York and my best friend in one fell swoop. But I couldn't have even dreamed a dream that big. I couldn't have come up with that solution. Oh, I'll meet a best friend, and then she'll, find a way to get that I can move to New York. Do you know what I mean? Like my brain couldn't come up with that solution, so I could have never even asked for that. All we got to do is listen. And we got to keep going in, because it's like as we go in, spirit gets to go out.
Oh, she's full of them today, people. She's full of them. As we go in, spirit gets to go out. Put it on a t-shirt or a bumper sticker right now. Man, that is the truest thing.
That is the truest thing.
And spirit is always trying to go out. It's always trying to flow through. It's
because what's going out when we don't go in is the projection of the ego, which is, as you were saying to me the other day, the fake news.
The fake news!
That's all that goes out. Is that the clutter, the distraction, the busyness is actually just the ego going out. So we can either have a life filled with our outer expression of ego or a life filled with the outer expression of spirit. And the difference is we go in so that whatever comes out.
I feel like I'm going to wet my pants. I'm so, turned on by this conversation. I don't know why I wet my pants when I get turned on, but that's a conversation for another time.
Listen, you don't have to know the solution. You just have to go in and be curious.
Yeah. All the curiosity. Let's have that conversation. You know, it's so funny. I have a friend who is always in financial luck and is like, ugh. They just want to get paid, and they just want to they don't understand why there's such a lack of financial flow, right? And as you were saying, we go in so spirit can go out. If spirit just wants to go out the world through us, and because it's a flow, then spirit, that is money, that is energy, comes back to us, right? So if you want to invoke more money in your life or more flow, get into flow.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So I always feel like if you feel like the universe is withholding from you, it's because you are withholding from the universe.
Ooh.
Right? So
ooh.
The conversation then becomes, may I open myself up completely and receive what wants to be birthed through me, and then through that happening, because life is a boomerang, it will come straight back. And we must be willing to get out of fear.
We must be willing.
Or to walk through it. Let's love it and walk through it.
Retreating, right?
Right.
Fear is retreating, love is forward.
Yes.
So we just have to be willing to keep taking the next step forward. Yeah. Tony LaPage said the other day to me, and I'm not sure if this is from him or from a spiritual teacher that he was listening to, but he said, he was talking about the energy of money, and that we spend time going after money,
mm-hmm.
because we feel money is valuable. But what we need to do is make ourselves so valuable that people will pay money for us.
Yes.
So instead of chasing the outer thing, we make ourselves the most valuable thing. So it's like the outer world says, I need more of you, and I will pay you richly for it. We go in, so spirit goes out.
When we were on our little jewelry shopping today, you bought us both bracelets.
Mm-hmm, I did. You I did. Say what they said? Kristen and I were in this beautiful little jewelry store, and there was two bracelets matching, one gold, one silver, so I knew they were meant for us, and they say, love yourself enough to be yourself.
Love yourself enough to be yourself. Mm-hmm. I took one off when I was taking a nap. Well, I can't wait to get back.
Can't wait to get it back on.
And isn't that it in terms of all we really want to do is to be the space that expresses our deepest truth.
Yeah.
And so can we love and treasure ourselves enough to go in, to have the conversation,
yeah,
to let that purpose and that dharma and that truth be revealed so that it can come out.
Yeah. Right? And it will be so big that it scares you. And that's how you know you're on the right track.
And that's how you know.
Wow.
Okay.
Friends, let's do it.
Let's do it.
Wow. So I hope that you had a beautiful time listening to our podcast today. And I hope that you will spend this week going deep into conversation and listening with yourself, because your dharma is going to be screaming at you. In joy and celebration once it has your attention.
It's like this little, I just got this vision of like a little bouncy kid in a bouncy jungle gym.
Pay attention to me.
It's so fun. Pay attention to me.
I have all the answers for you.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you enjoyed our podcast, share with a friend so we can all do the Dharma dance together.
Let's all do the Dharma dance together. There's another bumper sticker. She's full of them today, my friends.
Connecticut just speaks to me.
Yes.
You can find us on Facebook at the Create Facebook page. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at the Create Playgroup. You can find us on our brand new shiny website, thecreateseries.com. And if you sign up on our mailing list, you get a little free downloadable present from us, so we hope you check those things out. And more than anything, we hope that you fall so deeply in love with yourself as you get to know yourself this week.
Oh, you are so gorgeous. You are so beautiful. You are sexy and fun and intelligent and full of infinite power. Mm. You are the gift.
You are the gift.
Enjoy unwrapping it.
If you want to know about the Create Workshop Series, you can go to
www.thecreateseries.com.
And if you want to know more about us, you can go to kristenhenge.com or
natalieroy.com.
And if you want to come to Create, you can go to
the Actors Green Room in New York City. And it is Sunday nights from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. and Tuesdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m.
And their website is www.theactorsgreenroom.com. And you can buy Create on demand if you don't live in New York City.
Woohoo!